the Word of God is not bound by time. It's an eternal word. It applies all the time. But perhaps during this pandemic, we have new insight into today's gospel. Controversy about washing hands naturally makes us think of washing hands. The very strict commandment during the pandemic is wash your hands. And when you come home from the market, be sure to purify yourselves. These are good rules, or these are reasonable human traditions. They're not the Word of God. They're not absolute. If you see somebody in the street not wearing a face shield, don't immediately judge him for having broken the commandment of God. He's broken the law of Metro Manila. Yes, and those laws have reason. But it's not necessarily a sin. So don't stand in judgment of people who are not following every human commandment. Notice, Jesus doesn't say anything against washing hands or against any other rite of purification. He wants to make the distinction between Word of God and Word of Man, God's law and man's law. And God's law has to be held in greater respect than man's law. So whenever the law of man conflicts with the law of God, well, the law of God comes first. You see happening in some places, the law forbids living the Christian life, worship, prayer, living according to the commandments. Well, those laws we're not obliged to follow. The root of our capacity to make laws goes way back to creation, which is where today's first reading takes us. So let's go back, not simply to the various kinds of laws that exist, let's go back to the very foundation of everything, creation. We started yesterday reading the famous story of creation in the first chapter of Genesis. Yesterday we read about the first 4 days. Today we read the final three of the 7 days. It's a very profound and beautiful passage. Before we can appreciate it, perhaps we have to address the first objection that the modern world raises to this issue, to this passage about creation. The modern world says, well, we know that the world is 4.5 billion years old, and that the human family began some 6 million years ago. We know that there are plant and animal species that existed before and don't exist now. We know that some, even stars, didn't exist before, and it came into being through the various galactic nebula or whatever, wherever stars come from. And so they say, this account of Genesis is worthless. It contradicts what we know by science. Maybe you even had children or grandchildren come home from school and tell you, well, what you told me is the world is made in 7 days, and we learned in school that the world is 4 billion years old. And science is more trustworthy than the Bible. Now, that's a very common objection. People say, well, no reason to read the Bible because it's not true. and they discount it out of hand. Now, the reason why that objection is not valid is because the Bible is not written as a scientific text. It's not about the age of the universe or about the development of the various species in their chronological development. It's not what it's about. It's about the foundations. It's about where everything comes from. It's about the order which is planted in creation from its from the beginning. In fact, this passage about God creating everything lays the foundation for science itself. If creation were not orderly, if it were not consistent, if there were not specific laws that determine how things work and how life develops, there would be no science because there would be nothing to investigate. Imagine if everything were completely random, if there was no predictability. Imagine if you don't know whether the sun will come up or not. Maybe a few days, maybe three 24-hour periods will pass and there's no sun. And then it comes up for a couple of hours, then it comes down, back up again. What if there was no predictability? We would have no way of measuring days and hours and seasons. What if when you plant a mango tree, a chicken comes out of the ground? And then the next time you plant the mango tree, a cow comes out of the ground. Well, then you would say, well, I don't know what's going to happen. There's no way to develop an understanding of this. It's completely nonsensical. Well, it isn't like that. We know that creation is orderly. It's consistent. It can be investigated. We can learn the laws of nature. And we're supposed to learn them. So, this passage is not unscientific. It's not pre-scientific. It's the foundation of what we know in modern terms as science and the scientific method. Scientific method is built on the existence of things and the orderly array of things. Look at the periodic table, for example, the elements. They're very, very orderly. Or look at the classification of the different species. Very orderly, complex. We don't understand it all, but we know that when cells divide, they develop cells something like the cells they came from. Nothing comes out of nothing. At the heart of the story of creation, though, above everything else, is man, the human creature, the human family. Everything else is, like we said yesterday, is just tassels. It's just decoration. God sets up everything. He puts it all in order. He puts the plants in their place. He puts the birds in their place. He puts the sea creatures in their place. Animals in their place. But then he decides to make a creature that is not just put in its place, a creature that has a unique place in creation, a creature that is made in God's own image, made male and female, made with and given dominion over the earth. We can learn a lot about our place in creation just by reading these few verses. Creation is good. God blesses creation, says it's good. The human person is very good. Very good. Let's just reflect a little bit on these three things I mentioned: being made in the image of God, being made male and female, and then having dominion. We could talk about this forever, because this really defines or reveals what God's plan is for us. So first of all, made in the image of God. God created man in his image. Every human person is a little icon of God. Every human person is a representation of God. We're not God, but we're in the image of God. Unlike anything else that we see, anything else that we experience, the human person is unique in this way. And we know this simply by our own experience of being with people or not being with people. If you walk into an empty room, you know it's empty. If there's one person in that room, even if it's a baby, even if it's a person sleeping, even if it's a criminal, it makes a whole difference there's someone present in the room. You don't have to think about it or define it, make a scientific investigation. You know that there's someone in the room. And that makes a huge difference. An empty room is one thing. A room with a person in it is occupied. There is an icon of God. So whether we're talking about an unborn child, or we're talking about a person in a coma, or we're talking about a person with a disability, or we're talking about a genius, or we're talking about a rapist, we're talking about an icon of God. Now, we can defile our dignity by sin. We can be unclean in the terminology of the gospel. We can become unclean, and we have to be purified. But we cannot lose altogether our human dignity. No one can. That's why we cannot use any person. You can't buy and sell people. You can't treat them as things. Can't take them for granted. A human person is worthy only of love. Only love. Secondly, male and female. You've heard me talk about this before, and perhaps I don't have to go into it, but you know, in our times, this very fundamental aspect of what it means to be a human person is being lost, being denied, that we are created male and female. Now there is what is called gender ideology. The gender ideology is that we're not male and female, or some people aren't, or it's up to you, it's not up to God. You decide for yourself whether you're male or female or something else. So there are dozens of so-called genders now, somewhere between male and female, or maybe off the whole scale. Gender fluidity, non-binary, I don't even know all the terms. I was very sadly struck last week when I learned that a man I knew from my college days, he was 2 years behind me in the university, I learned that he discovered that he's a woman. When he was 54 years old, he realized he's a woman. And so now he's changed his name and his body. Now, if that had been said 50 years ago, that would be a very funny, that would make a very funny story. It would be a joke, and you could make a comedy movie out of it. It's not funny now. It's a very serious rejection of something fundamental in creation. So since it's a rejection of an image of God, it's a rejection of God. Now, I'm not judging my classmate. I don't know why he thinks he's a woman, but the fact is he's not a woman. He's a man. Nothing he does surgically or chemically or by his dress or whatever he calls himself can change what God has made. We are male and female, and we will be male and female forever. Even in the next life, we retain our gender. In heaven, there are men and women. So it's a very beautiful part of creation. It's very good. It's very good to be a man. It's very good to be a woman. So to reject that is to reject something beautiful. The beautiful complementarity of the sexes. Okay. We're made in the image of God, we're male and female. And in a way that no other creature is, we are given dominion over other creatures. Plants don't rule over other plants. Animals don't rule over other animals. Sometimes we talk about the lion as the king of the beasts. The lion is not really king of anything. It's just a lion. An elephant is a big animal. And maybe it's got a good memory, but it doesn't have any authority over any other elephants or anyone else. But we, because of God's design, have authority over creation. We have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and all the living things that move on the earth. Dominion. Not absolute dominion, because God is the one who owns everything, we have dominion as stewards of creation. This is another basic and very obvious fundamental truth, which is controversial, what we are allowed to do with creation. The very strange thing now is that the popular opinion is that we have to preserve the environment, but we don't have to preserve our own human nature. We can use cloning and biological engineering and gender assignment, reassignment surgery on ourselves, but we can't touch that tree. We can't touch that river, because that's environment. So the right understanding is stewardship. To treat creation as good, as the beautiful work of God, which we are responsible for. We have to enhance it, protect it, use it for the good of man, and hand it on to the next generation. So we can't abuse creation, that's for sure. Pope Francis has made this a very strong part of his teaching, that the abuse of the environment is a grave violation of the plan of God. But we don't worship the environment either. We don't preserve it as if we have no right to use it. We do. Okay, so there's many, many lessons to be learned from the Word of God. Let us respect the good, beautiful, orderly creation, especially the very good, beautiful, orderly creature, man, male and female.